Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. This Friday, June 29th, Ray LaMontagne and Nico Case will take the stage in Joe's Field at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts. Nico Case, a member of the New Pornographers and power trio Case Lang Veers with Katie Lang and Laura Veers, put out a new solo album this month. Hell On was released by Anti Records on June 1st. It's largely self-produced and full of new stories and new sounds from the reliably fantastic musician.
Early in the morning, where there used to be a school, there's a tiny business late, don't let the cattails fool you. Down in the bottom, when nothing is born, sleeps a silver dollar.
Nico Case, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
Before we talk about your new record, this concert at Mass Mocha that you're playing with Ray LaMontagne marks a return to Mass Mocha for you. You were there for the Solid Sound Festival in 2013. Do you like performing there? Did you have a good time performing there before?
Yes, I did. It was beautiful. And it meant a lot because my grandparents actually used to work there when it was the factory.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of interesting to go back, in a way. I like it.
Who's with you on the tour? Are you playing solo, or do you have a band backing you up?
I never play solo, so I have a large band.
How did you put them together for this tour?
There were people I'd worked with before, people I worked with on the recording, and I don't know. It was a bit of a scramble, because our drummer had a baby, and he is at the age where he had to stay home, so I got my friend Kyle Crean to play drums because he played on the record a bit. And then Kelly and Nora were busy with the Decemberists, so I got Rachel Flotard and my friend Shelley Short to come. And then on guitar and bass are Johnny Sangster and Lex Price, respectively. And they played on the Case Lang Veers tour, and I love working with them, so I brought them. And then John Rawhouse, who's always there. Sweet John Rawhouse.
When you, and obviously this isn't the first time you've done this, but you put out a new record this year, it sounds a certain way on the album, and then you have to kind of work up the songs for live performance with the band that you will be with on the road. What is that process like? How do you do that?
There's a cool thing about music where, you know, the kind of the theory where the camera adds 10 pounds?
Yeah.
The studio kind of takes it away. So I tend to use more people or in the studio than I need to live, because live with you in the room, it takes less people to make that much, to have that much presence. Does that make sense?
I think so. Yes.
And so it's actually easier to bring it across live than it is in the studio, in a way. So we just practice like crazy. And then I kind of dissected a bit, and we all confab and decide what's missing or what's needed, or and some things we replicate, you know, organically, and then some things we'll take a sample of and, you know, use it on a keyboard or something. But there are very few of those moments. It's mostly us doing it in person.
Tell me, how long, when did you begin writing the songs that are on the new album Hell On?
I started writing them back when I was working on the Case Lang Veers album with Laura and Katie.
Mm-hmm.
And the first song I wrote was Oracle of the Maritimes.
I planned a dream inside a dream with your uncle, a fisherman who died. The Oracle of the Maritimes. Too cloudy to see fireworks. We would ride a chest of drawers into the waves. His granite hand held mine.
And I co-wrote that with Laura Veers. It was just kind of a natural progression if we had enough songs for the Case Langriers record, but apparently I was still going.
You have made a video for your song, Bad Luck. Can you tell me first, tell me about the dog that is in that video, please?
That's Kelly Hogan's dog, Eddie. And it was really great because Kelly and Nora were able to be in the video. But Robert Forster is Australian, and he was not able to be in the video to represent his own voice. And so I thought it would be fantastic if Eddie could stand in as Robert Forster, because it's the ultimate compliment to be played by Eddie, the smartest dog on earth.
Are you tired of things going right, things going wrong? Tired of trying to make everyone happy, too tired to sing your own song. Like a dog from a running dream, that's bad luck.
The video has sort of the album artwork is also represented. I guess I'm sort of like soft shoeing around trying to ask you about the fire.
Oh, you don't have to soft shoe.
I know you've been talking about it a lot.
It's okay. Like I'm just happy everyone's okay. So I'm not freaked out about it, or I don't really have any trauma associated with it.
Okay. So for listeners who might know the story, can you tell us what happened?
Well, I had a really, really, really old house, and it was built long before electricity was invented. And so many different kinds of electrical systems were put in. Some were gotten rid of, some weren't. And my barn was very large, and it was very dry. And it's where I store hay, and it was either an electrical malfunction in the barn, like with the lighting or something, or there's a pinhole in the roof and my hay composted and caught fire, which happens way more often than I knew. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm from the Pacific Northwest and I'm from a farming family, and I don't think that ever happens there. I mean, maybe it does, but I'd never heard of that happening in my life. And then, you know, the fire marshal people were like, no, happened all the time.
Right. So
I was like, oh, okay, I guess it does.
And you were in Sweden working on the album when this happened, when your house and barn burned down.
Yes. Felt really helpless and crappy and terrifying.
How did you decide to go work on the album in Sweden with Björn Gidling?
I was a big fan of Peter, Björn, and John, and I also was aware of a lot of other projects that Björn works on, like, you know, Likili, and he had done work on my friend's Camera Obscura's records, and I asked them, I was like, how is it working with Björn? And, you know, they were like, well, he did a bunch of arranging, and it was amazing. And, you know, just everything he works on, he has really great choruses and really excellent hooks. And he uses a lot of sounds that I really like. And he also uses a lot of sounds I never use. And so I just wanted some new sounds, and I wanted some new energy, and I wanted to do something I hadn't done before. And, you know, I love big choruses. I mean, you know, being in the New Pornographers has definitely made me pretty excited about that. so I wanted to kind of go outside my usual working and, you know, just go to a different place and kind of challenge myself a little bit, be kind of the stranger and, you know, just see what becomes of kind of an adventure somewhere else.
Where, when you hear the record, when you play the songs, where are some of the places that newness and experimentation is most obvious to you?
Well, I think Bad Luck is probably the most obvious. We recorded that from the ground up in Sweden, and Björn led the charge on that one. And he got Peter from Peter, Björn, and John to come play as well. And it just has a really great urgency to it. And on everything that I really wanted to happen, happened. And I'm so grateful to him for, you know, having me aboard, because he has great resources and knows great musicians there and, you know, has access to really incredible studios. And it just worked out so nicely. It was like a student exchange program.
Can you tell me a little bit about the song Halls of Sarah, the message that you're conveying and where the idea and the framing for that song came from for you? And I'm not just picking it because it's my name. That's not why I'm picking it at all, actually.
Well, I think people like to use the name Sarah a lot because it's a very beautiful name. And, you know, Sarah has been in many, many, many songs. And I just thought a lot about women in songs who are kind of used. I don't know. I was just kind of obsessed with that idea. And like, maybe they don't want to be in the song. It's kind of crappy, you know, because it's easy to call someone out and pick on them. But, you know, they have to go into a grocery store and hear it for the rest of their lives. And somebody's maybe made $1 million off of it. Like, it's kind of gross, really. But then there's ways to write songs about people that aren't exploitive, which brings us back to the other Sarah written by Fleetwood Mac, which I feel like it really celebrates Sarah, but doesn't exploit Sarah. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
There's a fine line, and it can be done.
Men build their industries around you, diverting rivers of your hair. They're looking for their own reflection. You're left to die of exposure, Sarah. Sarah with the beaten heart, Sarah with the mouth of stone, Sarah with the, you are a silent movie, Sarah.
You can express displeasure with people or whatever, but it doesn't have to be so gross. There's a line and there's a way to do things that don't use people. But the idea of woman as muse or woman as groupie or any of that is really gross to me.
The song Pitch or Honey, tell me about that one.
That one is kind of a sing-songy. I just wanted it to be a sing-songy, rhymey kind of strange adventure. And I used two very different sounding parts of the song to make one song, which to me just sounds like an adventure kind of.
Yeah, it's almost
taking a turn.
Like a suite in two parts, if a suite can have two parts. It feels like it switches to the second movement, kind of.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, since I know nothing about music, like you're saying, if a suite can have two parts, I have no idea either.
Me neither.
I have zero music training whatsoever. So that's kind of freeing, though, because there's not any rules. So you just make whatever you want to make. And sometimes it feels good to have the song have two very different parts that are completely different moods, but they're related.
I wrote this song for me, and now I let it go. From the island of the Texaco, I release it into...
I don't know what you'd call it. Like, the first part of the song is kind of the wind-up to the joy of it.
No idea why I feel strong, and I'm making rich money.
And then there's, you know, the releasing the joy.
It's the gift that keeps on getting us, the shrapnel from your wedding, she said.
You don't have any musical training, but how did you, as you began pursuing the career in music, stay true to what your instincts were and learn as you went and not decide to go take a class or something?
Well, I was able to go on tour a lot, so I think it was kind of like, I'm already doing it. The job's already available. So it wasn't like there was any time to go do things like take a class somewhere, because I was always so busy doing it and trying to keep, you know, the lights on that I couldn't really say no to anything, if that makes sense.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I adore your music, so we all benefit from however it has happened. I appreciate the path.
Thank you.
Nico Case is playing with Rayla Montaigne at Mass Mocha on Friday, June 29th. They'll also be at Brewery Omegang in Cooperstown on the 4th of July. Nico Case, it's been wonderful to have the opportunity to speak with you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nico Case will be at Mass Mocha with Rayla Montaigne this Friday, June 29th. To learn more, visit massmocha.org. They'll perform at Brewery Omegang in Cooperstown, New York on July 4th. All the songs we've shared are from Case's new album, Hell On. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.